Welcome to the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented by JosephAuto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, every Tuesday, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers take you inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Hear from players, coaches, and anyone else relevant to the team throughout the week. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes and Google Play or listen on our must-have Bengals app. Let's go. All right, welcome to the latest edition of the BBP. Paul Dana Jr. and Jim Osarski. We missed doing it. We missed you. We missed our people, you know?
We did.
It's been a minute, but we were busy. We were traveling, trying to gather stuff to bring to all you. You were in Mobile. I was at the Super Bowl for this whole last past week, and I finally come back and it's snow. It's snow all over the place. This is great, but yeah. I don't know why. I mean, it was maybe one of the most beautiful days I've ever seen for Super Bowl Sunday. You know, you go to the stadium, and it is gorgeous. 65 degrees, little slight wind, just not a cloud in the sky. And it was like that as I left on Monday, and then I come back here, and it was that, like, wintry mix and like whipping wind, and I'm thinking, why don't I just stay out there? Why am I leaving? You know? But yeah, it was a wild couple of weeks for us traveling around.
Yeah, man. And you know, I think people are itching for this. I gotta give a shout out to everybody on Twitter using the hashtag BBP at us over the last week or so, because it hasn't been too long. I mean, we did do it. We caught up a little bit after Senior Bowl. All those coaching changes.
It's been 2 weeks. It was really hard to try to pull off. And honestly, you know, let's put all cards on the table. We did mention doing one last week and wanted to do one last week, but there was a lot happening out there. There was a whole lot of perfect stuff in the air, and Marvin Jones was coming through Radio Row, and I kind of wanted to hold back until we got all that stuff parsed through rather than put something up that had, you know, a shelf life of 3 minutes.
Right.
So this is a chance. Everything has sort of come to a close now. We can look back on the Super Bowl and some of the other stuff there. If you haven't checked it out yet, I posted my 10 observations, sort of my 10 Bengals thoughts from a, you know, sort of 1 week in the NFL foxhole that is a Super Bowl week, which is just insane. And from a media perspective, there is no event anywhere. I don't care. You get the Olympics, maybe. Okay. But that's once every 4 years, and it's very different than what the Super Bowl media week is like. That you never realize how powerful this sport we cover is and how global this sport we cover is until you go. And I was attempting to get questions into people and interrupted dozens of times in a different language. I mean, it's just like, that's just the way it is. You know, you've got the German reporters, you've got Japanese reporters, you've got tons of, you know, Deportes reporters. I mean, you have, it's amazing. It's amazing what this league is right now.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you were there firsthand, but even from afar, it definitely, you know, to see, you know, Radio Row and kind of what you had to wade through to find guys. I know you and I were trying to stay in contact as best we could, you know, with the time difference and whatnot. Hey, Paul, you know, so-and-so's here. Did you see this? And it's just, you know, you can go there with like 12 people and still feel like you missed stuff.
Yeah, and you could probably ask the reporters from Charlotte and Denver about that, who showed up with just armies, you know, because you can't, there's no net wide enough to capture everything. When you have, I mean, what we get on a regular basis. Like, it's just as an inside knowledge. I mean, around Paul Brown Stadium, we'll have 45 minute availabilities every week, but there's no guarantees that anybody's going to be there. You know, you go to the locker room, there could be three guys in there, and you may not see a guy during an open locker room for months, because they're just not around or whatever. It is mandated that every player, coach, assistant coach is available for an hour three times that week. That does not include media day.
Yeah. You mean opening night, Paul? Opening night.
Oh, sorry. Opening night. You're right. Thank you very much. Opening Monday night, which was just a complete crap show. But, you know, you're talking a player. If I need, like, let's say I was writing a story on Andrew Norwell, or like I was, or on Derek Wolfe, or whoever, they would be sitting at a table or at a podium for a total of 3 hours where I could walk up to them during the course of that week. That is crazy. I mean, as far as availability goes that we normally see in this league.
Right.
I mean, it's at a certain point, what are you asking, guys? You know, is sort of well, my thing, but
yeah, that's where you get the inane media day or the famous or infamous, if you will, media day questions, right?
Absolutely. I saw puppets. I saw the Swedish chef was setting up to do a live shot with two people behind him doing a separate live shot as puppet people. This is all around each other. And I mean, there was a man dressed up as a little Denver Broncos mini elf person, a little person who was doing not speaking, but rather just posing for an entire hour. In whatever his whatever, however you, I don't even know how to describe what how he was posing, elf like. I mean, this type, Miss Universe was there with a significant contingent. I mean, you know, it's every bit as silly on the floor as it is or ever has been on TV. So, I don't recommend it for anybody who has respect for our profession.
Yeah,
that's for sure. Yeah, San Francisco ends up, you know, they did a pretty good job of hosting. The city's fantastic. I was worried about getting around in the city, but it wasn't too bad. The only problem, obviously, being that the stadium is so damn far away from actual San Francisco. But, you know, outside of those shuttle bus rides, it wasn't as bad as you would think. It was all in all, pretty interesting. Let's get into some Bengals stuff, though, which, you know, I find really interesting. This is how much that they were sort of on the mouths of people around that you wouldn't expect. How much they were a topic, and that game against Pittsburgh was a topic.
Right.
There just seemed to be a lot of reaction to the ugliness of that game. And so to kind of get us kick-started here before we jump too far into that, I want to bring in, because this is how my week started. I landed and went right into a availability with CBS Media, and there was Boomer. And he had some things to say about that. So I want to bring in some of Boomer talking about Marvin Lewis, talking about the Bengals-Steelers rivalry, talking about Vontaze Burfict, and a number of things. Because, you know, he had very strong words to say after the Bengals playoff game. I was curious if he still stood by those. And sort of his take on this resembled a take that I heard a number of times from different people during the week and have heard nationally around where this team is at a lot. So I think it's kind of interesting perspective. So here's Boomer Esiason from out in San Francisco during a CBS media availability.
atmosphere.
Okay.
And I think that's really what we're all talking about, because even after that second after the playoff game between the Steelers and the Bengals, as a former Bengal, I apologize to all of our viewers, and it devolved into a, you know, what you don't want a football game to devolve into. You want a good, hard fought game. So when guys are, you know, talking on the field, or, you know, other teams get upset with that. That's usually when it gets into situations like that. So I think that's why most traditionalists or older people probably find it to be a little off-putting. But for me, watching the personalities come to fruition, I don't really have a problem with it. You just don't want it to be Josh Norman, Odell Beckham. You don't want it to be Vontaze Burfict and Joey Porter on the side. You know what I mean? You just don't want that kind of stuff. But you want good, hard, fought, physical, nasty football, because that's what we all love and why we love the game.
The Bengals-Steelers game, you were pretty outspoken about.
It was.
Marvin, was that in-the-moment thing, or do you still kind of, looking back on it, feel like that still falls on him and that's...
It falls on all the coaches. It falls on, you know, I probably should have called out Mike Tomlin as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because these two teams, you know, it's created something that I don't think the NFL wants. I don't think anybody wants to watch it, although I guarantee you the NFL will have this on Monday night or Thursday night next week. I guarantee it.
Yeah,
but there's an intensity there that... is bordering on, you know, lunacy. And I know both coaches before the game were told to control their players, to make it to make them understand it's only in between the whistles, and that game got out of control. Unfortunately for Marvin, it's really one player, and it's Vontaze Burfict that has kind of been the impetus for a number of this stuff. He's a great football player, but he crosses the line. So that to me is on the coach. And it's one thing if it happens one time, two times, I get it. All right, it's a third time because it's really intense. But to have it happen seven times, there is an obvious problem there. And it's obvious that Vontaze cannot control his emotions on the field when they need to be controlled at the most important times. And when you think about what Vontaze Burfict knocked out, Le'Veon Bell knocked out, Antonio Brown knocked out, Ben Roethlisberger had a fumble recovery, had a interception, ran into the wrong locker room, and then commits a penalty at the end of the game that adds an extra 15 yards onto a field goal attempt. I don't think I've ever seen a player involved in so much crap in all my life. Right?
It's today's game. It's today's play.
How do you, as a coach?
I don't know.
Is there a way to control?
That's why I'm not coaching. That's why I'm not coaching.
Have you ever had a player like that who you everybody in the locker room knew that an answer needs to be found for this guy?
Well, there have been guys like that. There have been guys like, you know, Dexter Manley and Charles Haley and guys like that. You know, you knew John Randall, that you knew playing against them were going to be like that, that we're going to go across, you know, and do some things that you would not be happy with, but I don't ever remember ever playing really with anybody on a team that was like that.
Yeah.
I only remember playing against guys like that.
Yeah.
And they forget that it is a brotherhood. And they forget that, you know, you can end somebody's career in one shot. You know, and whether it be diving at their knees, diving at their head, hitting after the whistle, you know, all of that stuff I put under the heading of, you know, they just don't get it.
So there it is. And, you know, I kind of wrote a little bit about this when I first got out there, but the discussion of the Bengals-Steelers rivalry is, you know, reached this lunatic level. And I think we've discussed that fairly ad nauseum as far as the ramifications of what that rivalry has been. But, you know, I mean, we got to lend it some credence at some point. I mean, what he's saying is true.
Yeah, especially this year, three games, and I think it's a little unfair that first game in Pittsburgh is sort of looped into it just because of Le'Veon Bell's injury. I mean, other than that, there really wasn't much happening in that game, at least that was whistled. And obviously, I wasn't here in previous incarnations of this rivalry, but it did. I mean, it was ridiculous, Paul. I mean, the fact that you started with this sort of pregame melee and the social media threats and, you know, NFL security looking in the thing, that is ridiculous. It is lunacy, if you will, because it's football and it's kind of, when things sort of really get off the tracks like that, outside the lines, it's kind of ridiculous. Now, everything that happens, I mean, personal foul penalties, look at the Super Bowl. You know what I mean? So, like, maybe this comes across as real homerish, and you could check me if you want, but I'm just kind of tired of it. Like, the Max Williams hit was a cheap shot. I mean, there are cheap shots in this game. We see them every week from other players. 55 on the Bengals is no exception, but I guess some of the things we saw, or the one penalty everyone wants to talk about in that wild card game, is something that you just see all the time. We have hashed that over, but what's funny is, like, as you said, Paul, everyone keeps talking about it.
Yeah.
You know, and like, it's interesting, I guess. It really, the narrative went one way, and like, that's what it is, right? And I know you've addressed it in your 10 takeaways from the Super Bowl at Cincinnati.com that it should be a little different than what it is. But, you know, Antonio Brown was out there where you were, fanning the flames again, and Boomer, I don't know. It's crazy.
Yeah. No, and Antonio Brown, who, by the way, this won't make Bengals fans like him anymore, rolls around with the deepest entourage I have ever seen. I mean, he has a personal photographer that just rolls around and takes pictures of him, not just at events like this, apparently at training camp and stuff too, that he has his own personal photographer for making sure that he gets all the photos taken care of. That is part of his entourage that rolls. I mean, everyone has, I sort of joke to it, pretty much all, you know, Radio Row, there's gazillions of media, and obviously that's, everyone there has a microphone or some sort of equipment. And these players come through and they're taken through from place to place to place, or, you know, former athletes, whatever they're pit with or whatever they're pitching. And the majority of them, a vast majority of them have, I call it the pantalon, you know, like the Tour de France group,
right,
where they all go in the diamond shape for speed. They all go in these pantalons of entourage, down through everybody with the seven people surrounding every side to make sure that no one can knife through and, you know, God forbid, get a couple of minutes with their client, on their way to something. But, anyway, so Antonio Brown, part of that, when he showed up, I think that did help stir everything back up with his "they're trying to kill me" thing. And that certainly felt, even more calculated. And it does fan the flames the way the NFL fanned the flames with the 3-game suspension, however you feel about that. And things like this, it's gonna be the case.
Right.
And you know, I was sort of asked, well, how does he get past this? And, you know, one thing that I'll have for you later, I talked to a couple of guys, one of them including Cortland Finnegan, of the Panthers, while I was out there, about this. Cortland Finnegan is maybe the notoriously one of the biggest villains this league has seen in recent years, and he's like, you don't get rid of that. You will always be to that guy.
Right.
So many people in this league, and you can, all you can do is play clean, and everyone's gonna know if they want to go there with you, you're not afraid to go there. Is kind of the way he put it, and you're never gonna really shake that, and you always will deal with extra looks from officials and all that. But you know what? That you sort of dig your own grave with that. I mean, that you fought that, and Burfict will fight that the rest of his career because of the way he's acted thus far. And there's plenty of examples of that, and fines to prove it and all that kind of stuff. If he can just avoid the penalties that hurt his team, I don't think anybody inside the Bengals organization have a single problem with the way that he plays.
No, you're right. And, you know, Marvin Lewis caught a little bit of heat for his sort of brief address of Vontaze at the end of the year when he said, you know, he plays very well within the rules. And it was funny because it was like, you know, and then everybody kind of screamed and hollered about all the penalties. Well, it's like, well, that's the point. The penalties are outside the rules.
Yes.
For the 70 snaps that especially against Pittsburgh or even Denver, you know, before that, the Virgil Green personal foul, and San Francisco, where there were no penalties, at least none that I can recall. You know, just the 3 games really that popped to me in terms of like Vontaze Burfict being a difference maker. You know, you're right. And here's a guy that, you know, frankly, for all of the – look what's going on in Buffalo, Philadelphia right now with LeSean McCoy. I mean, Vontaze Burfict has never popped up on a police report. So for all of the issues that may or may not exist within the locker room or on the practice field or on the stadium, I mean, we're talking about flags, right? We're talking about flags, Paul.
I mean, we are. I mean, we're talking about – disrespect for other players. I mean, you know, you had the stuff when you're talking about ankle twisting, which was a subject that came up because of what happened with Carolina in 2014 with guys that you are known to have had leg injuries. Brandon Marshall brought that up on the Pac-Man interview on Showtime, that he doesn't have respect for Vontaze because he knew when he had an ankle thing, Vontaze was twisting his ankle underneath a pile. You hear about spitting. You got the camera thing. You got the, you know, throwing the camera down, hurting the camera guy. You got, but these are all things that do happen within the game. You're right. I mean, it's not that he's some sort of criminal off the field, but it's the dirty, malicious intent in these things that's what you're going to be. You're going to be a target, and I think the Bengals are okay with that as long as whatever you do does not hurt your own team.
Right. Yeah. No. It is. It's going into 2016, and obviously he has to appeal his suspension. I would imagine, Paul, I mean, the league, you get hit with 3 games. I can't see him missing more than 2. It's just one.
I have to imagine they will win an appeal in some sort.
Yeah. So, I mean, so going into 16, it's one of those things where you're curious at how different he will be, how different the Bengals want him to be, because as Paul Gunther has said many times, like the reason he's so good, it's not because he's the fastest dude or the most strongest guy, all the sort of measurables, right? It's this other thing that he has, which they, you know, it's how do you corral that and how do you stop it, at a certain point?
Yeah.
Right?
No, you're
so,
right.
But it'll be the biggest. I mean, you know, for all of Boomer's ranting and raving about this, I mean, let's be real. I Pittsburgh, the NFL knows what it's doing. Pittsburgh Cincinnati is going to be a primetime game.
Yep.
Very early in the season,
Week 4, right? Don't we think that?
Yeah.
imagine that it ends up in Week 4 on his first game back? I mean, the league is not stupid.
No,
the league knows exactly what they're doing.
Exactly.
Mark my words, right now, Week 4, prime time in Pittsburgh. Right.
Right.
Wouldn't it be the game in Pittsburgh?
Yeah,
wouldn't they send them to Hines?
Right.
Send them to the Wolves, and it will be Bengals at Steelers Monday Night Football. Or Sunday Night Football. Guaranteed.
Yes.
Guaranteed.
Yeah.
Mark it down. I don't even need the schedule release in April. I'm just going to start writing about that right now.
Right. Yeah, so, no, exactly right, which is sort of the ever-ongoing hypocrisy of the NFL when it comes to a lot of this stuff.
Amongst other things. No doubt. Here's what I want to do. I also, while I was out there, I caught up with Carlos Dunlap, who had come in from Hawaii in his trip there. As he was kind of doing the radio row tour, it was the first time he'd done it since his rookie year. And, that's what 13 and a half sacks in the Pro Bowl will do for you. It helps these guys build their brand, you know, and
right.
he talked a little bit about Vontaze Burfict in this conversation. So as we flip forward, I do want to get that in there. So here's a little bit of Carlos Dunlap on Radio Row about a number of topics, Vontaze Burfict included amongst them.
Are you able to shake off that playoff loss yet, or is it still sticking with you pretty bad?
It's going to hurt me until we're able to answer that question, man.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's happened too many years in a row, and I don't want it to become a habit. So
yeah.
We got to break it before it becomes a habit.
Yeah. What did you see right after the game, and the NFL put on a 3-game suspension on Vontaze. He's kind of become this thing now. I mean, what is your take? It seems like there's a lot of people kind of trying to vilify him.
It's crazy how they can come back and do things after the fact, but in the heat of the moment, there's a lot of things that they miss.
Yeah.
They're not willing to address. They pick and choose where they want to address. Obviously, Vontaze has got that aura around him.
Right.
So that reputation. So.
Yeah.
people are somewhat looking for it and they expect it, but I don't think he's the same player that everyone thought he was when he started. Like, obviously, when he started, that was his edge. Yep. I feel like he still plays with an edge, but he's trying to obey the rules as well.
Yeah.
He wants to keep his money in his pocket. And I feel like this year, he did everything he could to play with an edge up into the whistle. Like, before, you couldn't say that. But now, he's been playing up to that whistle.
All right, so let's kind of move forward a little bit to some issues that were coming up while I was there, and I couldn't help, you know, when you go back and look at the Super Bowl and how good Denver's defense was, and have an extra appreciation for two things. One, that those two drives the Bengals had on the first two in Denver on Monday Night Football, when they went 80 and 90 yards, just absolutely tearing Denver's now championship, one of the great defenses of all time. You know, we were everyone debating after the game, tearing that to shreds. I mean, has to go down as the best quarter of offense that they played all year, and it was with their backup quarterback on an offense that was spectacular the majority of the season.
Right.
All things considered.
Yeah, and this, I know we you and I have talked about this sort of outside the BBP, and you know, if 14 stays healthy, Paul, I think, you know, we're, you know, there's some ticker tape floating out in Cincinnati right about now. I don't know, man.
Yeah,
they were. It's got to be a real, real bitter taste for a lot of those Bengals players. You know, knowing that they probably, you know, should have, could have in Denver, and what would have happened if the QB was healthy. And you're right. I mean, AJ McCarron and what that offense did, you know, in that first half, and you know, it was kind of a fluky fumble. And I don't know if that turnover happens if you spin it forward 2 weeks after he's already had four starts. You know what I mean? So it's just kind of one of those things where, obviously Denver won the game, and we see what happens. You're right. I thought that was an interesting observation on your part. When you look at it now and what Denver was able to do against New England and then Carolina
and Pittsburgh twice. Right. I mean, this was from about week 11 or 12 on for Denver, that defense was unstoppable. I mean, what they were doing to people was ridiculous, and that continued through the playoffs, and they were in that prime. I mean, we talked all night that night about how that game was probably, I mean, it was huge. It was as big as it could be in a regular season game for both teams. That was like a Super Bowl type atmosphere for them, and it was loud and ridiculous in Denver. This was a line that hit Tom Brady 21 times and hit Cam Newton two times more than he'd been hit all year. The Bengals offensive line in that game, I think it's underestimated how spectacular they were that night. And to protect AJ McCarron the way that they did, you know, who came out of that game, you know, certainly taking some hits and some sacks, but nothing like what we've seen this Denver pass rush do. And that was in Denver where the stadium was shaking the entire time.
Right.
In one of the craziest atmospheres I've ever been in. It's just like this entire season if you're a Bengals fan. It's bittersweet because, that was great. That was fantastic. But you didn't win the game.
Yeah, right.
But, and just imagine how different everything would have been. To me, people will talk about the Hill fumble and the meltdown. I will look at Denver on Monday Night Football and say, I think that's just as relevant.
Right.
It's, if not more so, because they're the number one seed in the other case. And we saw that Denver team that just won the Super Bowl was a flawed team. They had a subpar
turkey bowl
offense that they were trotting out there. They had they were the only team in Super Bowl history with less than 200 yards offense and win.
Yeah.
They couldn't move the ball. They were 1 of 14 on third downs. And that's the team that just won the Super Bowl.
Right.
So to think that the Bengals couldn't have done that, they had the number one scoring defense.
Right.
And an offense that was in the top 10. And if you have 14 And I know Bengals fans are like, stop, stop. I've already vomited four times as you've been talking. I get it. But, you know, and that's why so much of what we say and so much of what we're talking about here, when people start doing knee-jerk reactions like things I get on Twitter about trade the quarterback and, you know, and I even discussed in my 10 observations about the Marvin Lewis quandary and be like, you're right. They should have fired Marvin. No. I'm not saying that you should have fired Marvin Lewis. I'm saying it's interesting to see the two different ways you could talk. I'll get into it in a second. But, you know, if Andy Dalton is playing, or if they find a way to win that game in Denver, or Hill doesn't fumble, I mean, things that probably should have happened where the odds were significantly in their favor.
Right.
We're having possibly a very different podcast today.
Yeah.
You know? And it's hard not to look at it that way. I think you have to look at it that way if you're going to try to have the reality of what the future is for this team.
Right. It is, you know, I think it'd be different, Paul, if, you know, one of these playoff teams in the AFC or even the Panthers, to be honest, despite their record going into the Super Bowl, was so dominant and so good. And you'd be like, wow, you know what? They were the juggernaut, you know, and it probably wasn't going to happen for us, you know, if you're a Bengals fan or if you're a Bengals player. But I you know, it is. I'm still sort of speechless about just like, wow, this was really, I don't know. I don't think the window's closed because your quarterback and you're really, your best players are still in their prime. They probably got a 2-year mark, you know, by the time AJ Green and Geno are 30 and Carlos is getting to 30. And so they're not out of the window, but this, I don't know, Paul, you know, unless they win one in the next 2 years, I think this one will go down as really the
yep.
You know, yes. Just the, like, it hurts now, but I think when you step back and really look at how it played out, those final weeks of the regular season and in the postseason, I don't know. You, I mean, I don't know how many Bengals teams you can look back in history and say that about. I know Dave Lapham has said it. Maybe if you go way back when the playoffs were, you know, not every team got in and those Raiders got in the way and, you know, those 14-game regular season type things. But obviously it was a different era. It's hard to compare. I don't know in this modern era of the NFL if there's a Bengals team. 05, but, you know, maybe.
'05 would be the first one to come to your mind, and you say, oh, because of Carson. It's right. Because of what that team was at that point in time. But you're right.
But those
there isn't.
But, yeah, it doesn't. Yeah.
And it's like for anybody, you know, these opportunities, these seasons where guys don't get hurt and they don't come around very often. Now, granted, the most important guy ended up getting hurt, but there so much in this league, it's a matter of luck and circumstance. When you get there, you've got to try to make the most of it. And it's hard not to say, oh my gosh, this was set up for us, you know?
Right.
But, you know, you're right though. I think to look at the future and particularly at 2016, and we'll see how free agency plays out. Right. We move on to that now. Who ends up coming back? Who ends up leaving? Marvin Jones out there this week talking about, you know, he's going to test the waters. I think we all should have assumed that, if we didn't, that a player, particularly one who's as savvy as Marvin Jones is with marketing and understanding his brand and things like that, you have to test the market and see what your best options are. I mean, you'd be crazy not to.
Right.
So we'll see him do that. But, and I still think there's a pretty good chance he comes back here. But, you know, all that, you still, even if you lost people, it's still Andy Dalton and Tyler Eifert and AJ Green and a damn good offensive line, you know.
Right.
And I mean, you're and a quarterback who could have received MVP votes if he doesn't break his thumb this
right.
past year. You have that alone, not even discussing your defense, you got a chance, you know. And yeah. You have a defense that is bringing back most of its important parts in up front. And you hope to resign a good majority of them on the back end. You still have your best, if your best player is Geno Atkins, He's back and still in his prime. Vontaze Burfict is coming back, no matter how you feel about him. He played at an unbelievable level when not accumulating personal fouls. And Carlos Dunlap just came off the best year of his career and is still in his prime. And they'll re-sign a good majority. And they're not going to let that secondary fall apart. I mean, there's no way. And so, right. You know, they're going to be bringing a lot of the same pieces of the puzzle back and adding another draft. And when you talk about that, you're also adding guys from last year's draft that maybe actually has to contribute now.
Right.
So it's not like the window was slammed shut, but I do think that you have to look at it and say, man, that was quite possibly the best opportunity. I think a good person to talk a little bit about where that's all at with free agency and the window and a good view of the Bengals in this division now is Andrew Hawkins, who we caught up with out on Radio Row, who was out there. He's doing all good with his concussions now. I was actually out there with Jeff Hobson from Bengals.com was hanging around with me, and in came Hawk, and we talked to him for a long time. I want to bring you a portion of that conversation. He has an interesting perspective, having been in Cincinnati, having understanding Marvin Lewis and the Bengals and what they are, very good friends with that whole receiving core, including Marvin Jones, has gone through free agency with the Bengals a little bit and dealt with how that can go. Getting Hugh Jackson, who he knows before, understanding this division, just a lot of ways where it's really interesting to talk to him. One of the smartest athletes you'll meet. So I wanted to bring this conversation we had with Andrew Hawkins about sort of the state of the Bengals and the division and free agency and all that other stuff. So here's Andrew Hawkins from the Super Bowl.
I thought Hugh was last name.
No, I seen Hugh after he got hired. I went to the office, had a talk with him, excited to have him. We powwowed, talked about some of the things to come.
What's going to come?
It's a good question, man. You know, that's the question we in Cleveland ask every couple of years. You know, but I think he's the right man for the job, and I'm excited for him.
That's got to be cool for you. I mean, because you actually have a history as opposed to a guy that just comes in. You got to learn a little bit.
I mean, it's cool for me more because I know the kind of guy he is. You know what I mean? I don't mind playing for any coach. Any new coach that comes in knows what they're talking about and is focused on winning and doing things the right way. But that's not always the case in the NFL. And right. You never know until you get the guys there. Well, I'm happy because I know Hugh. I know that's the case. So that's one thing I don't have to worry about.
Do you start the job now recruiting Bengals free agents?
because I don't face any tampering violations.
Right.
So I can say what I want to say.
Yeah, you're going to be like the representative out there to try to lure them over.
Right. I mean, obviously, man, I love the guys over in that locker room, and they're great players. And, you know, I mean, we'd be privileged to get any of those guys. Like, the Bengals would be privileged to sign them back. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, you know, hopefully the opportunity presents itself, and we can snag a couple of those guys. And, you know, try to help us turn things around in Cleveland.
Well, I mean, you know, Marvin's looking at some of, not just Marvin and Moe, he's looking at other guys too, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I mean, this is, even in the Bengals locker room when I was there, we would talk about this time. Like,
this year?
Yeah, because like a lot of guys will be up.
Yeah.
You know, between, you know, AJ was going to be up. All things considered, I was going to be tendered, and then I would have been up.
Right.
You know,
right.
Last year, like, so between right. last year and this year.
Right, right.
You know, this is the area where they, you know, they knew that they would have to re-sign guys. So, you know, I'm excited for those guys, man. Free agency is a cool time for guys that have never got to pick where they wanted to play or have never been courted this way. You know, it'll be a cool experience for them. And, you know, there'll be winners and losers like everything else.
Yeah. It's like what people say is, oh, you should just re-sign with your team. You would be crazy. You have, like, maybe one time in your career where you have any bit of leverage to not go out there and see what you can get, right? I mean, that's the way every player should kind of look at it, right?
That's it, man. Yeah. That's it. I mean, you put all this work in to get to that point, to maximize, you know, all the work you put in, and you'd be silly not to let yourself do it, man.
Right, yeah.
Honestly.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's great.
Has he told you about your role at all?
You? Who, Hugh?
Yeah.
Nah, we haven't got you. Like I said, man, I'm at the point now, you know, this is my sixth year in the NFL. I've got a contract. As you know, my goal was to play one game in the league. I've exceeded that. My role, whatever, he decides my role is, I'm good with it. You know what I mean? Whenever he decides, you know, I'm at that point now. I just want to win. I just want to be a part of a turnaround. I want to be a part of a, you know, make it Cleveland a winner when they haven't been a winner in such a long time. I'm not too worried about, I'm not a guy that's like, give me the ball. I've never been that kind of guy. You know, I'm a do what I'm told guy as long as you have, you know, the leadership and the direction that I think is going to be the right way. And I know he has that. So I didn't have to go and ask him what my role was going to be, because whatever he decides it is, that's what it's going to be. And I'm going to give him everything I got.
How daunting is it as a player when you look at the three teams in this division and the history they had, for you guys to try to climb that mountain? I mean, it's you know how hard it is to reach that level, and you guys are rebuilding from ground one again, you know, the ground zero again, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, man.
Yeah.
It's tough, man. I know we got good players in the locker room. You know what I mean? We have a lot of young players, but they need direction, and we're hoping that Hugh can help provide some of that direction. I mean, if you look at 2014, we split with the Bengals, we split with the Steelers, and we lost a close one to Baltimore. And, you know, even that in itself was a step in the right direction. You know, we just got to get back. We can knock out some of the other non-conference games and even get to the point where we're splitting with some of these teams.
Yeah.
The Cleveland Browns have to be satisfied, man. You know, because it'll be a step towards that. The new turnaround.
You think the Bengals are the Bengals still the Bengals, or do you think they're going to take a step back?
You know, I think the Bengals are still the Bengals, man. They have a lot of talent over there. You know, I think losing Hugh hurts them, obviously. I think if they lose some of these free agents, it's going to hurt them, obviously. But they've lost other free agents, and they've maintained. They have the Red Rifle at quarterback, who I've said all along I'm a huge fan of. You know, I don't think even maybe the people of Cincinnati realize how much of a gem they have in Andy. They have A.J. Green, who, when it's all said and done, is going to be mentioned with the rest of the best team to ever play the game. You know, and honestly, I think those two are the guys that make the ship go, man. And that's how it's been since I've gotten there, and it's been more of the same. And, you know, they've been able to build up players around them who are also great athletes and great talents. So I think the Bengals still be the Bengals, and I know we got our work cut out for us. But, you know, part of the process.
Okay, so as far as where the Bengals are going, as far as news right now, you know, you've got the possibility of franchise tags and veteran cuts are what's going to happen between now and then the combine comes at the end of this month. So I've been asked a lot about who those veteran cuts could be, if the Bengals are going to use the franchise tag. And I think we both can agree the franchise tag isn't happening.
No. No. Yeah. It's two guys, right? Marvin Jones and George Iloka. And the project, you know, the cap is going to go up. The league hasn't announced that yet. But, you know, I've been told, the cap's going to go to $154 million. And that's going to increase everybody's payday, and that includes the tags. And I think the projection for receivers, $14.5 million, which is guaranteed as a franchise tag number. The number for a safety is over $10 million. And that's just, it doesn't make sense for these players, for as good as they are or as complimentary as they are, what the Bengals do. It just makes no sense to use that tag, and even as Adam Jones at 32 years old, again, not worth that. Players don't like it anyway, and the money just doesn't make any sense. And to be honest, Paul, I don't know. I know sometimes the franchise tag is sort of used as like, well, we got you, and this kind of like lengthens the window for an extension. But I don't think, while the Bengals would want to extend or sign extension, I'm sorry, like to re-sign these guys, I don't think that's feasible. You know, no. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. No, and because the Bengals know right now today how far they're willing to go to pay these guys.
Right.
So there's no reason that they would give that kind of huge money if they realize these sides are never going to find a middle ground. They'll say, if you think that's your value, go get it, and they will sit and they're not going to slap a tag on a guy. Not right now. And so they're going to say, this is how we value you. And if you think you can go get more, we ask you to do so.
Right.
And we're here waiting to pay you every dime. And you'll get every dime of this, just like Leon Hall did. And just like how they'll sell Michael Johnson coming back after leaving, and they'll talk to you about TJ Houshmandzadeh being frustrated after leaving the Bengals and not realizing what he had until it was gone in this organization. That's what they'll sell, and it's a good sales pitch. They're right. You will get every dime of your contract pretty much if you re-sign with the Bengals. And I don't know that you can guarantee even half of that, even if you wanted to, in contract with another team. So there's a lot of value to that. So I do think that you'll see them figure something out. There's no reason to franchise a guy. As far as veteran cuts go, I'd say the possibility of there being a few, I would say the most likely would be AJ Hawk. He has no dead money against him this year. $1.4 million in cap savings. We're not talking about huge numbers, but they have young linebackers. I mean, I think they were really happy with the development of PJ Dawson and what his instincts are, what he could be for this team. And there just weren't snaps for him. And they're going to draft, I'm sure, another linebacker this year at some point. And they've got maybe with perfect suspension being whatever it is, they want to hold on to him the same way as they wanted to hold on to him last year because perfect was going to be missed. But, you know, I mean, you had PJ Dawson inactive a lot of games this year.
I think, make no mistake for Bengals fans listening, any veteran cuts, I think it's strictly for roster space.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because look, they're like 30 million under the cap. I mean, there's no really financial reason to release anyone, which is really where you want to be. You know, they could keep everybody if they wanted. I mean, so you're right, Paul. I think AJ Hawk is the most likely veteran cut, about $1.5 million. But I think it is for roster space because you look at that linebacking core. Vinny Ray's a free agent. They want him back, but they want him back to be a backup, to be a special teams contributor. But the snaps that he's seen the last 2 years, you know, maybe there's that one team that gives him a little more money to play more regularly. So it's interesting with AJ Hawk because it's like, you know, when do you want to do that? You know, do you wait to see what happens with Vinny Ray? Do you wait to see if Vontaze Burfict's suspension is – I mean, look, AJ Hawk is a really good guy, really good player, or locker room guy, I should say. But at 10 years in, you know, I don't know what his market's like.
And you saw a year of him.
It's
not like you came out away from this season saying that guy really made a difference.
Right. And he doesn't really do much on special teams.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there was talk when they were elevating Obwehi and things like that, that Hawk could be the odd man out. So, I mean, for that fact, if you have no dead money by cutting a guy,
right,
you save $1.4 million, and you know there's going to be an influx of draft picks, so almost certainly it'll be a linebacker, and it could free up some more snaps for other guys, it would make sense to do. But you're right. When you have variables like perfect suspension and will they resign Vinny Ray and things like that, it maybe doesn't make sense to do right now.
Right. Because Emmanuel Muir is also a free agent. Let's not forget it. And while his snaps definitely dwindled as the year went on, and again, more of a special teams guy, I think the biggest con, I guess, AJ Hawk is that he's not really a special teamer. Now he did work out. We saw him practice, but you know, that's just not his strong suit, and you need your linebackers to be your backup linebackers to be special team sort of wizards, right? And you know, that's why Trevor Roach was active in the playoff game, right? I mean, this practice squad kid was because his body type, and that says a lot too as to what happened with and maybe how they view Hawks' roster spot. I mean, and maybe to spin it, keep it in that room, Paul. You know, Ray Maluga, right? $4 million owed this year.
Yeah, and there'll be no dead money. Because of how they structure the contract. Yep.
But again, you know, here's a lifelong Bengal, your middle linebacker, and, you know, with all of that sort of unevenness right now in the room, what is that worth to you to release that guy early or even at all, considering how you how Paul Gunther, Marvin Lewis feel about that continuity and a lot of those things.
$4 million is a big number, and that would be the only thing going against Ray, because he's a foundation piece, a starter, a big part of their run-stopping group, and that's important in this division and going forward. He played well enough.
Right.
You didn't come away from that year saying Ray Maluga didn't play well. You said at the very least he played up to his normal standard and earned his contract. And so while $4 million is a huge number, like you said earlier, they have money. But if it comes down to saying, okay, we can bring back George Iloka, but only if we cut Ray Maluga, I don't know. Maybe that's a decision that's a different one, where they feel like they need to find money somewhere. Traditionally, in a lot of things that we've talked about earlier, when we talk about Bengals that get every dime of their contract, they don't like to do that. They want to pay Ray Maluga what he signed here. So, I don't see that. I don't see that happening. Especially Hawk is different. He was a guy that was signed from a different team. When they have guys that they drafted and they developed and they paid a second contract, they like to pay those guys to fruition. They like that to be the precedent. So with Maluga and as well with Domantas Pekko is a very similar thing. And of course, people just hate talking about Domantas, even though he just had probably the best, most productive year of his career.
Right.
He had a bunch of sacks and the belly dance and all this stuff. people love to say, get him out of there.
It's amazing.
The Bengals love what he did. In Paul Gunther's scheme, they think he's great at it. And whether Pro Football Focus agrees, the fans agree, it doesn't really matter because the Bengals coaching staff agrees.
Right. And you're right, Paul. I mean, Domantas, first of all, his money's coming off the books after 16 anyway.
Mm-hmm.
$3.7 million. Is that too much money to play a rotational tackle? Yes, but you're right. For all of the quote unquote bad stuff, if you want to call it that. So when I came into the beat last year, it was like Domantas Pekko, his metrics weren't great, his raw numbers weren't great, but also Geno Atkins wasn't great in 2014 and wasn't there for part of 2013, and all of a sudden that guy is back. And look at the impact it made. You're right. I mean, look, Ray Maluga and Domantas Pekko combined salary around $8 million for what? Base defense guys? I mean, that's a lot of money to pay guys who are really sort of run specialists in a league where that's sort of going by the wayside. But again, those are homegrown guys. Domantas especially, a really, really good locker room guy. Again, Paul, they have gobs of money. And if they want to re-sign Marvin Jones and George Iloka and Adam Jones and Mo Sanu, like they can probably get all of that done, without, having to jettison, or cut ties with two guys that have been here their entire careers. I guess I wouldn't be surprised because it's the NFL, but on the other hand,
I would be surprised because it's the Bengals and they don't operate in the same wavelength.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I think moral of the story, AJ Hawk. Yeah. I think we could see that. Outside of that, I don't see anybody else that would of relevance and people that would save more than $1 million.
The kicker, everybody's favorite punching bag outside of Brandon Tate. I mean, he's the only one. $1.5 million. No, 1 year left on the deal. They brought in the kid who we saw kick against the Bengals for St. Louis to a futures contract. Hecker, right?
Right.
I guess that's the only other one, right, Paul? That they
yeah,
might
you're right. No,
think
Nugent.
About.
But to me, that would be a training camp competition.
That makes – yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, I don't think you would cut Nugent without somebody else in-house.
Right, that you feel good about.
Yeah, you would want to have a competition there and make Nugent fight for his job and prove that he's better. I mean, I don't know that
– I just wanted to bring him up because I wanted to get people fired up about Brandon Tate and Mike Nugent.
Yeah, Yeah, people are all like, Tate hate and Nuge hate is all over. I did get that when I brought up their loss of the Denver game or something, and someone tweeted, "That's right. Thanks, Nugent." It's like, really? You're going to watch that game and say, yeah. Well, granted, I mean, it should have made that field goal, but come on.
Right. Come on. I did see that mentioned, Paul, so I had to slip in a Nuge just for you.
It's always there. So much hate there. So we kind of covered a lot of this stuff that's on the board right now. Let's see what's next. So next we'll have the combine, and free agents will start rattling in soon, and we can start talking draft now. Which, you know what? Another thing I wanted to bring up. I'm glad I sort of slipped into that, was the role that possible compensatory picks could play,
yeah,
in signing free agents, because the Bengals, with having so many of their guys, you have to think about what happens and how you can refill if you lose these guys. And so the best way is to get comp picks. So, and right. The best picks you're going to get as Bengals fans, I think, have come pretty intelligent on this topic because of what happened with Michael Johnson and Anthony Collins when they went to Tampa Bay and they ended up with a extra third round and an extra fourth round pick.
Right.
Which they turned into Hardison and, or was it Shaw, the second fourth round pick?
Yes.
Shaw and PJ Dawson.
Yeah, PJ Dawson, right.
So you're talking about, these are the types of guys that you can get if you play the comp picks right. And the comp picks work. If Marvin Jones or George Iloka sign elsewhere, those guys are going to be worth third or fourth round picks probably in the comp formula when it comes out. Now, that would be obviously the next year, so the 2017 draft. But, you know, you're talking about it's worth thinking about if you're thinking about matching a big offer,
right?
It's like, not only him, we have to pay him more, but his comp value goes up, and now, you know, he's probably going to get because anything that the Bengals aren't willing to pay would probably be enough to warrant a third or fourth round pick.
Especially those
are valuable in a year where they're not going to be out trying to sign a bunch of free agents. And if they do sign free agents, it would be guys that were cut by teams, because those don't count against the comp pick formula to make sure that you could still get your selections. So, I mean, you could be adding 3 to 4 extra picks, really, if there were a bunch of guys, since they have so many guys up, whoever they choose to let walk, be it Andre Smith, be it, Iloka or Jones or whoever, that could get you an extra third, an extra fourth, maybe a couple extra sixes.
Yeah. I mean,
that possibility exists for a draft where they have 11 picks or something like that.
And yeah, the Andre Smith and Marvin Jones, especially, Paul, we don't even really talk about Andre Smith because he's really not an option to bring back.
Yeah.
But again, we saw, you mentioned how the line played in Denver. We saw the struggles that Carolina had at right tackle.
Yeah.
He's going to get paid somewhere, in my opinion.
I agree.
It may not be what he wants, but I still think it's going to be a number that people in Cincinnati are like, what? And I think Marvin Jones is going to get paid. Again, his number or not, it's still going to be enough for those guys to leave Cincinnati and if those are third or fourth round picks, to me it's interesting because I know we kind of joked about mock drafts and drafts, on our last podcast at the Senior Bowl, and the reason I bring it up a little bit is just because there's a thought that maybe there could be three QBs in that first 10 or so, and basically the reason I bring it up, when you add in the Deflategate penalty, so there's one fewer first round pick. What I'm saying is there's going to be two or three guys that get pushed down, right? And if all of a sudden you've got a handful of third rounders, and it doesn't make a lot of sense, right? And I know there's going to be trades and whatnot, but I don't know. I think this year, if you somehow are handed a couple third round picks or one, even one extra one, especially for a team at Duke Tobin that seems to, you know, hit on a lot of these guys. It's definitely worth the consideration on their part, to be like, well, you know, what's the value? Especially when you, cause look, and I'm sure I think smart football fans know this now, but, you know, teams do have the whiteboard. They do have salaries out for 17, 18, 19, 20, and what their rosters look like. And, you know, and that stuff matters. And, you know, I don't know. It is interesting. That's the one sort of new part of the game, if you will. I know Sports Illustrated wrote a lot about Ozzie Newsome's playing of the compensatory game, which kind of bit him in the behind a little bit this year, but
for the most part has been a big part of why they've had such a deep roster for so long. Cause drafting is about quantity over quality for the most part. I mean, you in a game where you cannot guarantee anybody succeeding at the next level, you're always playing the percentages, and whoever you pick in the draft, you're gonna hope that you hope to hit on whatever 50% of them. Right. Well, guess what? If you have 10 and you hit on 50%, that's better than if you have 6 and you hit on 50%. That's 2 extra starters. I mean, it's a game that a lot of teams have played well, and the Bengals have played it well in recent years. It's been a big part to why they've had extra picks and they've been able to find guys and get guys like 2 guys that we're talking about, Marvin Jones and George Iloka. Were products of extra picks.
Right.
They were that was a 5th round that had 3 selections in it. The other one was Sean Prater, who's not here. They hit on 2 of 3 5th round picks. That's pretty impressive. And now those guys are going to go off. You got to constantly be thinking about quantity and not as much about quality. If you're going to continue to build a deep roster.
Right. But, yeah. You know. Yeah, and you said you hit on half. 5 of 10 is you hit on hit. Well, that's 9% of a 53-man roster.
Right.
I mean, so it's not – it's like, oh, it doesn't sound like a lot, but that's a lot.
It is a lot. I mean, if you go into a draft and you can get 3 starters out of it, you did very well. I mean, if any NFL team would take that. And it's so hard to really hit in these things. So, you know, I'm just saying – when you're looking at the long-term future of the franchise, you have to think about, with these guys free agents, which will affect the 2017 draft, the idea of adding picks into the future, and just keep that in mind when teams come a-calling and are, you know, dropping huge numbers that you might not be willing to pay on a guy who is, you know, a replaceable safety or a third option in the passing game. That's all. All right, let's wrap it. That's enough. This is the off season. Why are we going so long for? I don't know. I did though. I will say, I am very happy. I have the perfect song for us to go out today.
I'm happy about that too.
Because you didn't have anything.
No, I didn't.
No. Well, I had the perfect song to go out with because out of course. From San Francisco, native, and still mad that they weren't asked to play halftime, by the way, Metallica.
Yeah.
Okay? And we've had them on recently. We had them on before the playoff game with Nothing Else Matters. But I thought, with it being San Francisco and Metallica home, and they played at AT&T Park on Friday and Saturday, I did not go. I am bitter about that. I also could not score any of the $500 tickets to the Warriors Thunder game on Saturday night that every single famous athlete was at. So I wish I could have done more of those types of things while I was out there. However, Metallica put on a great show. Word has it, big San Francisco people. And with the Super Bowl ending, and we officially sort of move it forward, you know what we do? You know what we do when that happens?
What do we do?
We turn the page.
Ah.
Yeah. Nice. See what I did there?
Very nice.
Thank you. I was happy about that one. Let's just say when you have cross-country flights, you can come up with dumb stuff like this.
Okay? Well, see, my first thought would have been like Enter Sandman, and you and I can just like try to go to sleep for like 3 weeks. But I guess I know that's not possible.
No.
you know. But no, I was hoping maybe I was hoping maybe you'd surprise me with like a February gift.
Yes.
Be like, hey Jim, enter Sandman. We're going to hibernation for like.
No. Yeah. Yeah. Did Metallica ever write a song called 2 Weeks Off? That's the one we want. That's the one we want. Anyway, so keep in mind. Make sure you keep checking out Cincinnati.com. Plenty more stuff from some, especially a little more expounding on some of the topics we talked about. I'm going to have some stuff on Jeremy Hill and on the Vontaze Perfect vilification. That's not going away. So more stuff on that. Keep an eye as we go forward. And then we're going to have our series looking at each position coming up very soon, later this month. Full breakdowns for you. So keep checking it out. Keep picking up the newspaper if you still get those. Thank you. And otherwise, we are going to head out of here. Let's bring in Metallica, and we will talk to you soon from the BBP.
On a long and lonesome highway east of Omaha, I can listen to the engine moaning out his one old song. Think about the woman or the girl you knew the night before. But your thoughts will soon be wandering the way they always do when you're riding 16 hours. There's nothing much to do, and you don't feel much like riding. Wish the trip was through.